You are looking live at RFK Stadium in Washington.
Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Rich Podolsky, who is out with a brand new book, You Are Looking Live, How the NFL Today Revolutionized Sports Broadcasting. The book is available everywhere. It's got a terrific foreword by Jim Nance as well, and of course that iconic television show, The NFL Today. Rich, I read this book, and I love the fact that it was written in as much as, I read it cover to cover, but you could pick out basically any chapter, and they all work as basically long-form journalistic pieces about various aspects of the show. But just jumping into it, what is your connection to the NFL Today that gave you such an insight into this revolutionary sports television show?
Brian, back in 1977, I was a 30-year-old sports writer, and I had the opportunity to become the writer at CBS Sports, and I wrote for the NFL Today and for CBS Sports Spectacular. Prior to that, I was covering the Miami Dolphins down there in South Florida for the Palm Beach Post. And a guy by the name of Michael Pearl was a major producer down there for WTVJ, the CBS affiliate in Miami. I got to be friendly with Mike Pearl. He became the producer on the NFL Today. And when I was back up north in Philadelphia, where I'm from, he contacted me and asked me if I'd like to come and work for him at the show, and what an opportunity. Now, the show really went through a tremendous transformation 2 years prior to that in 1975. You know, all your listeners are way too young probably to remember that far back, but in 1975, if you were an NFL football fan, you had no way to get up-to-date information on your team. It was the dark ages as far as being a sports fan goes. There was no internet, no cable TV, no ESPN round the clock, no CNN round the clock. Unless you had an AP ticker in your living room, you couldn't get any information, and then you waited till Sunday, and the pregame shows were all taped days in advance. So there was no real information on those pregame shows. But in 1975, a guy by the name of Bob Wessler, a young executive at CBS, took over CBS Sports, and it was his idea to really go live with the show. They tried it the year before. Wessler came in and made it work, and he wanted to break some barriers along the way, and he came up with the idea of having three co-hosts on the show. One of them, of course, was Brent Musburger, who was an unknown at the time, other than in Chicago. But the other two were the first woman ever to be on a live sports show like that, and that was Phyllis George, a former Miss America of all things, and Irv Cross, former Eagle great defensive back, who was the first African-American to be on a live sports show like this. And a year later, Wessler had the nerve and the gall and the chutzpah to add Jimmy the Greek Snyder to the cast. Jimmy the Greek was maybe the most famous gambler in the country, and he was there to talk about point spreads and who to bet on. And even though the NFL strictly forbade such discussion on the air, they got around it, and the show was an enormous hit. They opened with Brent saying, "You are looking live at Soldier Field in Chicago," or "You are looking live at Vet Stadium in Philadelphia." And that was a tip to the gamblers what the weather was. So there was news right off the bat, and they came in with injury reports and what was going on, field reports from guys at the games like Brookshire and Summerall. It was exciting for fans and to be working on the show. In the very first season, the show won 13 Emmy Awards. People were rushing home from church so they wouldn't miss it, especially in the heartland out there in Iowa City. And the show not only took off in the ratings, but it really helped the NFL grow its fan base and become America's number one sport over baseball.
Well, Wessler really acted as Cupid for this great love affair between television and the NFL. And, you know, you took us back to the time where that information just wasn't out there. The pregame shows were taped. But it really was fortuitous to realize. People don't realize what they don't have if they don't have it. But this was going to be a coming of age. So was Wessler just the first one to get his foot in the door of it? Because he couldn't have anticipated the internet, but he must have anticipated somebody else would beat him to it.
Well, he probably did anticipate it was going to come, but nobody else had the guts and the courage to do it, especially to put a woman on. I mean, she wasn't just any woman, Phil Short. She was only 25 years old when she went live with the NFL Today, and she became America's sweetheart. The public just loved her and ate her up. And Wessler had said that he thought sports on television have become a male ghetto. And by that he meant wall-to-wall men. And as a matter of fact, it's that way again today. When you look at the pregame shows on CBS and Fox. But in those days, Wessler was really the one who had the guts to put a woman on. And she was not somebody who worked as a sports reporter. She was just a fan. And they were able to make it work by having her do personality pieces where she would go down and interview the top athletes in the country. One famous interview was with Roger Staubach of the Dallas Cowboys. Another was with Joe Namath. And she was able to get stuff out of these guys that most of the sports reporters or the guys covering the teams those days could never get. Because we got them on the personal side. She interviewed them in their homes. She had been toughened up as Miss America because she had to go to Vietnam to perform for the troops with some of the runners-up. And she fielded questions from the press, not only about should we be in the Vietnam War, but what do you think about women's lit? Well, who do you think should be president? Things like that. She knew her way around the block, and at 25 years old, Phyllis George was pretty darn savvy, and for Wessler, she was the perfect choice. And it also, she parted the Red Sea for other women sportscasters after her. It kind of gave permission to the other people who ran the networks and the producers at other stations and cable after that to start hiring women. It hadn't been done.
I'm chatting with Rich Podolsky about his brand new book, You Are Looking Live, How the NFL Today Revolutionized Sports Broadcasting. Another young lady who Phyllis George paved the way for was Jane Kennedy, who joined the show a few years later as Phyllis's replacement. But Jane was somebody who got an interview with Muhammad Ali, and I thought that was one of the most interesting stories in the book, how she was able to secure that. What was her connection to Muhammad Ali?
Well, we got to back up a little bit on Jane Kennedy. Phyllis George had been a tremendous success and left the show, as it turned out to be, on a temporary basis for 2 years after her failed marriage to Paramount Studios head Robert Evans. Phyllis turned out to be the fourth of seven wives for Robert Evans, and she left him after 2 months and went home to Denton, Texas, near Dallas, and she wanted time off to recover from that. And CBS gave it to her, and they didn't know how long she'd be out for, so they ran a kind of a contest on who should replace her, and they sent out word to all of the top modeling agencies and entertainment agencies, like William Morris, to send us your best candidates. Jane Kennedy had television experience. She was a gorgeous African-American young lady from the Ohio area. She had been a former Miss Ohio, and she had been on quite a few TV shows that were taped or filmed in those days, but she didn't have any live experience. ICM would not put her on their list to submit to CBS. So she went around them through her friend Jimmy Brown, the ex-Cleveland Browns football player, got to Bob Stenner, a famous producer at CBS at the time, and Stenner sent her to someone to meet, and that person put her on the interview list at CBS. CBS wound up interviewing 16 people on a live Saturday closed circuit interview. Each young lady got 15 minutes, five of them with Brent Musburger, who came in for the day. And Jane Kennedy won that audition and got the job. Now, she was on the job maybe 2 weeks when she was in the studio and she heard them discussing how they needed to get an interview with Muhammad Ali. She and her husband, Isaac Kennedy, who was a writer and a director, had become friends with Ali and had actually traveled with him to the Thriller in Manila. And she got to know Ali pretty well. And overhearing them, she mentioned that she knew Ali and she could help him get the interview if they would just give her a private plane to get there and get back in 2 days. He was about to fight Leon Spinks. This was the rematch, which Ali won. And she promised them an interview, and Ali gave it to her in the hotel right after the fight. They ran part of it on Sports Spectacular the next day, that Saturday, and they ran the other part of the interview on the NFL Today that Sunday. Prior to that, even though she won the audition, she didn't have a very long contract at all. And after she got that interview, CBS called her agent and extended her contract for the entire year.
Jimmy the Greek Snyder, some of the stories that you tell about him are just fantastic in here, but he had to really disguise the ways that he referred to point spreads on the show, didn't he, to avoid overtly talking about gambling?
Yeah, absolutely. Pete Rozelle had gone before Congress to reassure them that there would be no gambling on the NFL as far as any of their broadcasts, and they didn't want any of the network's pregame shows to discuss gambling. He had gone before Congress and stated that he thought only 2% of the viewers bet on the games. Well, CBS had a public relations gentleman by the name of Beano Cook. He was well known as the master of the one-liner. And when Beano heard Rozelle say this about only 2% of the people bet on the games, Beano blurted out, "If that's true, they all live on my block." That was something that the sports writer community really enjoyed hearing, because everybody bet, whether it was man-to-man or with a bookie privately in those days. They got around it with the Greek by the Greek predicting what he thought the final score would be, or the Greek would say, "I think they'll win by a touchdown," or "I think they'll win by a field goal." What does the golfer say when he hits the ball out of bounds? He says, "Four!" And that was a tip-off to take the points. The Greek, when he came on the show, was probably the most famous of the four of them. He was a well-known individual. He became famous in 1948. When he won $1 million betting on Harry Truman to win the 1948 presidential election against New York Governor Thomas Dewey. Truman was a 20-1 underdog just a week or two before the election. And Jimmy the Greek was shaving one morning, and his sister said, "Why are you growing a mustache? Don't you know women hate mustaches?" And he said, "Why?" She said, "It reminds them of Hitler." Well, oh my God, the Greek looked at the front page of the paper. He saw a picture of Thomas Dewey, and all he could see was Dewey's mustache. And he came to the realization that Dewey could lose, and he was 20-1 favorite. And he did some research. He wound up going to New York, where all the big bookies hung out at Lindy's restaurant, where they were famous for their cheesecake. He bet a total of $50,000 between three different bookies, getting odds of 17 to 22 to 1. And they all paid off. A few days later, Walter Winchell, who was the most powerful media person in the country, maybe the world, Winchell went on his radio show and announced that Jimmy the Greek Snyder was as big a winner and maybe bigger than Harry Truman, that the young gambler from Steubenville, Ohio, had won over $1 million. And from that point on, Jimmy the Greek was famous, and he just became more famous into the 70s when he became friends with Mike Pearl. Pearl introduced him to Wessler, and Wessler brought him on the show, and the ratings zoomed up even more after that. He was a real character in his own right, and he caused some problems on the show, as you read, Brian, in the book. He and Brent had a famous fisticuff action in October of 1980 at a bar called Pear Trees after work one of those Sundays.
Well, the stories in this book are just, it's chock full of stories like this, and we've only scratched the surface. This book is called You Are Looking Live, How the NFL Today Revolutionized Sports Broadcasting by Rich Podolsky. The book is available everywhere, and it's got a fantastic foreword by Jim Nance as well. Rich, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this book. I absolutely loved it.
I appreciate it, Brian, and I just want your listeners to know that this was the show that changed the way America watched football.
There's always a beginning for everything, and this is what you can trace that to. Thanks a lot, Rich.
Thank you. Take care.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.